What happens when two men with one mic and a bottle of liquor discuss society at large? Garbled Podcast.
By the time you're listening to this, happy motherfucking New Year's, folks.
That was good foreshadowing. I like that.
Yeah, happy New Year's, and welcome to the New Year's special.
Yeah, year in review,
year in review,
what we're calling it. And I'm Nick.
And I'm Ramon, because you're Nick, and I'm Ramon.
All right.
So that should already tell you where our state...
We're at Lucky's. Lucky's last chance.
Yeah.
South Philly.
This is the bar that we've been coming to, and you should definitely come out here and check it out. It's a great spot, and if you see AK, the bartender, tip the fuck out of her.
Yes, and also you can buy us a drink, and that will get you mentioned on the... podcast. We'll call you out by name and or username or whatever you want us to refer to you by.
Yeah,
that's a contest.
Non-gender neutral.
That's a contest where you can win just by doing it.
Yeah, just come out and meet us.
It's like the best contest ever.
All right, folks. So this is our 2018 year in review episode. It is a special.
So it's like a musical? It's a review?
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like a musical in that sense.
No, let's not sing.
We're not going to sing.
No,
I wasn't going to sing. I didn't understand what the question was really asking.
I made a theater joke. I apologize. It won't happen again.
Okay.
In 2018.
I'm not singing, so you can put that shit out of your head right now. This is not going to happen.
I could imagine you doing an amazing Fiddler on the Roof.
No. If anything, I would sing the song from Moana. Like, I see what's happening here. And that's it. That's as far as I go.
Give me if I were a rich man, just
no,
one bar.
No. No.
Okay.
Not at all.
Let's move on. Oh, thank you so much.
So
we got our food.
Yay, we got our food. By the way, this place has awesome burgers. So we're shouting them out because we've been here multiple weeks in a row.
And, it's just, it's good all around goodness.
So our year in review is brought to you by...
That was really hot. I'm sorry.
He took a bite out of, like, really... That you know that when they bring it to the table, they just finished making it. Therefore, it is almost guaranteed to be ridiculously hot.
Oh, my God. Yeah, and I missed my cue. Sorry, this week's episode is brought to you by wine. Wine? I'm trying to bring it back. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I didn't have anything prepared.
So this week we're going to be taking a look at the year of 2018 as a whole. You know, more or less what the year meant to everybody. I think we're going to throw in some future predictions, right?
Yeah, and then, we'll end up with future predictions, but really, what was 2018 for everybody? Like,
what did 2018 mean?
How did it feel to you?
What did 2018 mean to you?
It's more of a gut feeling episode than.
Yeah, and then we're also going to look at, you know, the people that we lost in 2018.
Yep.
Which is something that we started last year. Mm-hmm. Is it memorandum or?
Memoriam.
Memoriam, yes. So we're...
In memoriam.
We're
from
looking
the Latin
back.
Of something.
If you're going to quote the Latin, you have to actually know...
No, I just have to allude to it.
Oh, okay. All right. That's American stance. I love that.
That's where my
that's
job
kind
is.
Of, do you have a news story or...
Yeah, I got a news story.
All right, awesome.
Wait.
So we're going to go into news.
All right.
So go ahead. Why don't you tell us what your news story is?
All right. So, Ramon, do you like word problems?
I got enough problems. I don't need word problems.
Okay. Let me rephrase. Have you ever been intrigued by the problems like a detective shows up and finds a corpse in a log cabin and there's nothing but a puddle of water on the floor and a hole in the ceiling? How did he die?
Yeah.
Like, you've heard that one, right?
Yeah, no, to me, I'm... okay, so, for me, when I was in school, those were called Minute Mysteries.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's a different context.
All right, so I got a real life one for you. Ready?
Go.
All right.
Wait, I have to concentrate for this. Go.
That was how much prep time you needed for concentration?
I need to concentrate. Right. No, I'm just saying, like,
All right. 71-year-old Alan J. Abramson in Palm Beach, Florida, left his house. He went on his normal morning walk. He usually ends up at Starbucks. He didn't make it there, however. Shortly after he left, there was a gunshot heard in the neighborhood. A dog from a jogger actually found his body. He had been shot.
Whoa.
There was no evidence around him. This is all true, by the way. This is not just me making shit up. There was no evidence of a gun on the scene or anything like that. He was shot from an elevated position. But this is in a retirement community.
Okay.
So there aren't really elevated buildings like that. You know what I mean? It's like it's residential. It's not like skyscrapers and stuff.
Right.
Police couldn't figure out what had happened. There were no suspects. There were no cars fleeing the scene or anything.
Okay.
They CSI'd the shit out of this. They found in the blood splatter analysis a very thin line that was not coated by blood.
Okay.
So like a blank space within the blood splatter.
Okay.
How did he die?
I don't know.
No guess.
I got nothing right now.
That's okay. I wouldn't have come up with this even if I sat and thought about it and tried. Ready?
Okay.
So, he was 71. He was obviously not wanting to be around anymore. He took a balloon, like a weather balloon.
Okay.
Attached a gun to it.
Blew his brains out.
Flew the gun up. And pulled the trigger from an elevated position, which felled him. The balloon then went off, and as near as they could tell, this is a guess because they've never recovered the weapon, the balloon would have gone up to about, like, 100,000 feet or whatever nonsense, and then exploded under the pressure of being in the stratosphere.
Upper atmosphere, yeah.
And the gun would have fallen somewhere in the Atlantic Ocean north of the Bahamas.
Jesus.
Because that's how far up and displaced it would have been. And to try and get insurance money.
So that was...
And they figured it out because there was one tiny vacant area in the blood splatter.
You know what that says to me?
That insurance companies should investigate everything in this country.
No. The insurance companies are a fucking scam in that you pay... No. And let me tell you something. One thing about this year is I had a lot of experience with fucking insurance companies. Insurance companies are fucking scams.
Okay.
They actively go out of their way to fuck you over.
Yeah.
Because, like Chris Rock famously said it.
Okay.
You pay for something in case something happens. And
right.
When that shit doesn't happen, you don't get your money back. They
right.
keep your fucking money. But the moment that you need them, they go out of their way...
Yep.
To scramble and say, fuck you, you're
right.
on your own.
Right. Because that's how they protect their bottom line.
Yeah, no, fuck you. That's bullshit. It's
because they're publicly traded.
And that's bullshit.
I'm because coming to the point where I don't think we should have publicly traded companies.
I don't,
anyway.
Yeah, I'm at that point now.
Yep.
No, I think it's, insurance to me is the biggest fucking scam in America.
Yep.
Because it's such a waste of fucking... time.
Yeah.
It's the waste of time, energy, and effort. So you're going to pay somebody to sit there and investigate this so that you can get out of
yeah.
paying someone money for a service they paid for.
Now, you take the insurance
that's
part
like,
out of it.
Let me put a proper analogy to this. That's like paying for dinner, and then when you go to order, it's like, hey, fuck you, I know you ordered a steak, but here's a hamburger. Or, better yet, here's a burger bite, because that's what we think that you're worth.
Wow.
You get what I'm saying?
No, I get exactly what you're saying. That's a very interesting analogy.
It's
thank
like
you.
We're not
thank
going...
you, Guy Fieri. I heard it's good to use Guy Fieri's name in a...
All right, folks, you're going to have to forgive me. I am coming back from, like, damn near dying this last week.
You're a hero.
I'm a hero.
That word gets thrown around loosely sometimes. You're a hero.
Sure, why not? If Apple can be a hero for removing the headphone jack, I can be a hero for...
Wait, no, they never got that, did they?
Yes, they did. You didn't... That was the big thing back in
Thank you for freeing us from convenience and cords.
Yeah, right. Thanks, Apple, for being heroic in getting rid of the headphone jack. Anyway, to my news story.
Yeah.
My news story is don't believe the fucking hype, folks. So I'm serious. I go on CNN because I have the CNN app and I have it set to alert me like X amount of times a day. You know, when there's like news stories.
For foolishness.
And one of the stories is how divided the country is.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Do we have a breaking news sounder?
Right. So one of the stories. And as I continue to stroll through the app,
okay.
It's like, oh, after meeting with Trump, Senator Graham says we're in a pause situation on Syria. And then there's the retired general, Stanley McChrystal, says Trump is immoral and dishonest.
Yeah.
Okay. Fucking breaking news there.
Right.
Here's another one. That's great.
This is why we don't do Trump news, right?
Conway defends Trump's comments blaming Democrats for child migrant deaths.
Wait.
Yeah. Doctors say Sarah Sanders isn't telling the truth. I didn't know you needed a fucking doctor to tell you that.
Like, what kind of doctor? Like a pathological liar and a specialist?
I don't know. But my point is that if you sit there and you pay attention to the news, you would think, and we kind of touched on this on an earlier episode, where you would think that the country is split straight down the middle, 50-50. Yeah.
This might have actually, well, maybe a very early episode, but I think recently we've talked about it offline, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if it actually made it onto the episode,
right.
But we've talked about it off mic.
Yeah.
And it's this idea that the country is like 50-50 down the middle, divided in terms of...
Yeah, but that's just the population of voters.
And that's what I was getting at. It's not actually... The country isn't divided.
Right.
The country is not... 50% Trump supporters and 50% whatever.
Right.
It is more like 13%. 13-30% Trump supporters and everyone else.
Right.
And this is based off of the fact that the people who are the Trump supporters, unfortunately, are also the ones that turn out and vote. And that's why we made such a big stink on our voting episode about going out and voting.
Now, also, to be fair, there are also hardline Democrats that vote willy-nilly as well. So they're all kind of, there are people that go out and vote, and there are people that kind of vote every now and again, and there are people that don't vote. But what we're talking, when the news presents it, it is presented
50-50.
As... of voters, but it's never clarified that that's what they're talking about.
Right,
because it's sexier to say 50% of America. It's a new civil war, people.
Right, and it's not. The vast majority of people feel like, I think you and I do,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, they're not for a lot of things that the government is doing. Unfortunately, and this is why voting is so important, is, you know...
Yeah, it's like 50% of our listeners. So that's America. They think that we think certain things.
Right. And the reality is that it's more like 60% of America feels the way that we do,
that.
Or higher, that questions this administration. And I'll phrase it that way because I feel like that's the more PC way to put it.
No,
you know,
I like it.
Fair.
It's healthy to question.
Well, no, and that's the thing. It's like, that's another thing. Like, don't believe the hype.
Mm-hmm.
People will tell you, no, you should full-heartedly support whatever comes out of the president's mouth. And the most American thing that you can possibly do is to question your government. You should actively question your government.
When did you question Obama?
You know,
When was it?
I've had this conversation
when
with
was
people.
It?
I've had this conversation with people before.
Okay.
I would have happily started actively questioning Obama.
Okay.
If people would shut the fuck up long enough for me to question him, it was like,
all right.
Oh, Obama's fucking this up. I was like, well, right. I can't question. You know what I mean? Because I felt like 90% of the time that he was in office, I spent more of my time defending the man
okay.
and defending some of the things that he did
okay.
rather than like, oh, that was a fucked up decision or that
okay.
was a fucked up choice.
All right.
Do you get what I'm saying? So I
yeah,
never,
no, I,
never I never got a chance to actively question Obama because I spent so much time.
Because you were on the defense.
Right.
As opposed to now when you're on the offense. Because it's the other side.
Right.
Us versus them.
Oh. That goes back to a previous episode, folks.
A few.
A few, yeah.
No, but I guess my question would be, okay, so now he's out of office. Nobody's going necessarily after him anymore. So, hindsight, what would be the thing that
no.
you would question Obama on?
No, I can't even, no, because I feel like everything Trump has done going into this year, like I feel like Trump has actively gone about destroying everything that Obama
mm-hmm.
bothered to put in place.
Yeah.
Oh, was Obama in support of this? Fuck it. I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm the complete opposite of it.
Like when he said repeal and replace Obamacare. You remember that?
Yeah, we're
that
gonna
was
replace
like, that
it
was
with
like
something
day one.
Better. We're going to replace it with something stronger and
right.
better.
We don't know
faster.
What that is yet, but yeah, the $3
million
yeah, policy.
The $6 million fucking man phrase. It's just,
the mansplain?
Yeah, yeah. We're going to make it better and stronger and faster, but... For those of you who don't know, that's the sound of the bionic man or the bionic woman or the bionic dog.
Or however they self-identify.
Right. But, I feel like...
One day, we're going to do an episode where I say, what would you question Obama on? And you'll give me an answer.
No, I'll give you an answer. One of the things that... I can give you a straight answer.
Go for it.
On it. The whistleblowing thing. Obama, one of the things that he ran
Snowden?
On... No. Well, yeah, Snowden.
Okay.
But one of the things that Obama, like, ran on,
mm-hmm.
and he was really big on, was... protecting whistleblowers. And I don't know if you know this, but he actively went and removed that from his website, that he would go out of his way to protect whistleblowers. And
ooh, when did he promise it versus when he got elected?
I think he was in office maybe 6 months before it ended up coming off of his website.
Because of Snowden, didn't it?
Yeah.
It was because of Snowden.
Yeah. Well, Snowden was a big part of it, yeah. But
yeah, I imagine, because... Is he a whistleblower?
Right.
Right?
And
that's the question.
And if I was going to actively criticize the Obama administration, that would be one of the things I criticized. In my opinion, Snowden should have been pardoned. He should have received the presidential pardon. But I also understand why he didn't.
Yeah.
Because Obama cared about keeping strong... ties with the CIA and the FBI and you know,
yeah.
supporting them, unlike Trump, who throws them under the fucking bus every opportunity he gets.
So he should pardon Snowden.
Yeah. I mean, if you
really, if he wanted to just finger?
Yeah, if he wanted to middle finger Obama, he would pardon Snowden and call it a day. And I would probably one of the that would be, in my opinion, one of the things that I could actually get behind him on.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's just my take because
very interesting.
I feel
I would have gone Guantanamo, but
Guantanamo. Okay, Guantanamo. Yeah, Guantanamo's another thing.
Yeah. The thing he was gonna close day one, and then he did, and then everyone went, you know, you can't do that, right? And he went, huh? And that would be the one thing I would point a finger at that I can think of off the top of my head. But anyway, not a lot he could have actually done there.
All right, so 2018. Let's get into it. Right?
Yes, let's look at the year.
So 2018, in terms of you when we were talking off mic.
Yeah.
I think you said something that I thought was really interesting.
Okay.
I'm
glad. I have my lucid moments.
2018, is if you put all the political scandal aside,
yeah,
right? And there was a lot.
And it's not like you can, but if you sort of, you know, pretended for a moment.
Right, to put it aside.
Mm-hmm. What was 2018 sort of known for?
Right.
What was it? Like, okay, so like, I guess I got to put it in comparison to like 2017, right? Mm. 2017, refresh my memory, was the year we just like lost everybody, right?
Yeah.
Or was that 2016? I'm confused.
What are those years?
One of those years where we just lost everybody. And that was sort of the marker, the hallmark for that year, right? And like, you look at 2018, and it's almost like, it's not real. It never defined itself. It never
as its own thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It never collated into something where you'd be like, "This is the year we lost all our legends," or "This is the year that science took a step forward," or "This is the year that such and such happened, and it was better or worse for us."
Right.
I never got a clear sense of what 2018 was.
2018 was one of those years that I think was remarkable in its unremarkableness. No, I'm serious. And I don't know if it's because of the fact that we've kind of come, that we've become complacent in how we absorb things.
Okay.
Like, with, okay, so we were talking politics a minute ago.
Yeah.
And it's like, what's the one thing that sticks out in your head politically this year?
Well, We've talked before about how Trump kind of conducts his business.
Right.
And he does it by just throwing as much stuff at the wall as he can.
And seeing what sticks.
He doesn't want anything to stick. He just wants to throw it at the wall. Right? In fact, it's better if it doesn't stick because there's more stuff coming. Right?
Right.
So the only thing I can think of politically right now in my brain is the government's shut down right now. We're going into 2019 with...
in the middle of a government shutdown.
With no government.
Yeah.
I mean, other than the essentials, quote-unquote, whatever that means. But there are government workers out of work, and they don't know when it's going to be let up, and there's
and
no signal
that
it's
fucked
going
up.
To.
That's fucked up.
It's the holidays, man.
It's the holidays, and you have people...
living paycheck to paycheck.
Because the government... And let's be frank about that mm-hmm. one thing.
Yep.
I think that's a staple across for 90% of Americans is the idea that you're living paycheck to paycheck.
Yes.
Because
yes.
I think I'm pretty decent financially, and even I'm like, all right, I'm waiting for Friday now.
Yeah.
And
I heard a CEO of a company I used to work for, he was talking to us, you know, and there were 1,500 people in a room. He was talking to us, and he said, look, he was talking about the stock price, right? Mm-hmm. And it had taken a hit, and it was just timing that he was talking to us during this time when it had taken a hit, and he addressed it, and he said, look, I understand the stock price took a hit, right? And I'm in it with you, and I get it. Right off the bat, you're thinking, but I make X amount. And this guy's the CEO of a company, right? And he goes, and that's cool, but look at it like a percentage, right? I make 100% of my money. When, you know, X amount goes to the government, my wife spends the rest. We're all in the same boat.
Okay.
And he was absolutely right. You know what I mean? Obviously, it's a bigger boat for him, but it's the same boat.
Right.
Where, you know, yeah, he makes X amount of money. But when you look at, it doesn't matter what level of government you're in. You're out of a job during a holiday. That's a stress.
Yeah.
That's a stress. And why is it shut down now? And not the last time this came up, when it got continued. Because it's the holidays.
Because it's a
bigger news story. Because it's a bigger stunt. And it's just Trump. When Trump was asked about it, right?
Mm.
What's the biggest contributing factor to this? You know what? Why he's holding it up?
Why?
He's tired of not getting funding for his wall.
Yeah. The whole wall thing is holding it up, which everybody and their mom keeps saying that this is the worst thing that you could possibly fucking do.
Right, but you know what is
his answer is to why are we in a shutdown right now? You know what his answer is? What is it?
I don't know. What is it?
Because of me.
Yeah. No, he's owning this one.
He owns it. He owns this. He owns the midterm elections. He owns everything. He owns it because he is positioning himself as the person that is in power. He can give you pain or he can give you pleasure. He's working towards a dominance, a perceived dominance in his own mind.
And I don't know how that endears him to his base.
It can't endear. So you've got a percentage of the population that's going to vote Republican if the next candidate for the Republican Party is Beelzebub, right?
The devil himself.
Q Smith.
My father. Go ahead.
Right. It doesn't matter because they've got an R after their name. He doesn't need to play to them. They're going to vote that one. Doesn't even worry about that. What he's trying to capture, right, is the Republicans that would consider another option if they were stronger than the Republican candidate. So now he's projecting strength. He's also going after the independents. Hear me out.
Okay.
Hear me out on that.
I'm listening.
Undecided voters, right? They don't know what to think. They don't know how to vote until someone tells them
how to vote,
how to do it, right? So what he's doing is he's displaying so much dominance and taking credit for everything that's good and everything that's bad and spinning it to, this is my whim. This is why religion takes over, right? In some parts of the country and in some people's lives. Because there's something so much greater than you that you have to bend to its will or it will become angry and your life will be worse off. Right?
Yeah.
So he's looking at independent voters or undeclared voters or non-voters as people that will either not vote at all or will vote for the one that convinces them they are the strongest. And that is how he is attacking the next election, and you better believe after his performance in the midterms that that is what he has been thinking about since Inauguration Day. And that ends my sermon for this episode.
I don't know what to add to that other than wake up.
Help us all.
Wake the fuck up, people.
Yeah.
And actually think about what it is that you're doing.
Or not doing.
Or not doing.
Yep.
Yeah.
You remember the signs nobody in 2018? Or 2016 or whatever?
What? One more time?
The political signs.
Okay.
Where you would have like Trump 2016, Hillary 2016, and you have nobody 2016. That's the voters he's going after. If you were one of those folks, I'm just telling you to vote, man. Just vote. Pick a side and vote. Because you know what? If we had 100% voter turnout and Trump won, I got no leg to stand on at all.
But that's not the case.
No.
And we've talked about this in great length.
Yep.
All right. You know what?
Let's get on politics.
No. Politics this year, the one thing that sticks out in my mind was how fucking ashamed I was to be American this year.
Wow, really?
Yeah, what? I think so. Because there was a faction, there was a grouping, there was a part of our government that said, and you can agree with me or disagree with me, personally, I don't give a fuck.
Okay.
I'm standing on my morals on this one.
All right.
There was a part, faction, a grouping, whatever, of our government that decided that their racism, their hatred of another person, their ability to strip somebody of their humanity was more important than allowing parents to stay with their children.
I know that's a hot button for you.
And whether I'm a parent or not, there is something monstrous about the idea of someone being completely okay with separating parent from child because of where they were fortunate or misfortunate or whatever, where their zip code is. Now you think about that shit for a second. Like, so someone was born on the other side of an imaginary fucking line and they're no longer a person. Fuck them. I'm going to take away your children.
Yeah.
And if you can look at that situation and not see a correlation with the Nazis or with any other evil in the world, fuck you.
We're social creatures.
Yeah.
And we've always had a parental structure. Any animal in this world has a parental structure. And when you seek to break that, indirectly or directly,
and it
makes you the boogeyman.
One of the things that I threw up on our Twitter this year was about how the one parent committed suicide in holding.
Yes.
I remember. You know, 10 hours after being separated from his kids.
Yeah. He didn't think he was going to see him again.
And he just killed himself.
Yep.
And if you can look at that and still go home to your family, yeah, something's wrong in the world. And I don't know if it's fixable, honestly.
How do you fix it?
I don't know. And we went back and forth on this one.
Yeah.
And we had an episode where we were talking about, like, us versus that, us versus them. And one of the conclusions that I came to was, if you are okay with stripping another person of the humanity, because that's essentially what you're doing. You're stripping them of their humanity because of that difference, whatever that difference may be. Whether that difference is politics, whether that difference is where they were born, whether that difference is, you know, what fucking football team or God they pray to.
Mm-hmm.
If you're okay with
Go Bird.
Stripping somebody of their humanity because of that difference, you're part of the problem. And you and me went back and forth for a while on this one.
Yeah.
And that was one of the few times where I actually came back and was like, no, I want to touch on this subject from last week. And I still feel that way.
Yeah.
Like, if you're willing to strip somebody of their humanity for that,
yeah,
you need to go. You're the problem, not the other way around.
And I hope I put forth the correct thing in that conversation.
No,
which was talk to him first. Because they honestly might not understand what they're doing. Give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
And talk to them first. And at the end of that conversation, if they're like, no, I did it because I think it's right, and I fully understand your point of view, but I have a differing point of view, then yeah.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, there's team people,
yep,
team humanity,
yep,
and then there's other. And if you're not on team people...
There's more people.
Yeah, exactly. You got to go.
You're outnumbered.
Yeah.
It's like that very inspirational speech by Morty in the Rick and Morty episode where they were doing the election. And he said, you know, the Rick and Mortys that believe in the Citadel outnumber the Rick and Mortys that don't. And he was talking about a unity. At the same time, he was talking about expelling the minority that disagreed with the thought process. And that can be dangerous. And that character actually wound up being evil. But it's still, you know, maybe a necessary message to send.
And you know what? If there's a takeaway in terms of politics this year, if there's a takeaway from this year, to me, it's how are people going to look back at this point in history and be like, you know, the way that we look back at, oh my God, they didn't used to, you know, surgeons didn't used to wash their hands. How ridiculous an idea is that? You know what I mean? Like,
well, they used surgeon fire.
Right. But that's what I mean. Like, how is history going to judge this? And I feel like we have no moral leg to stand on that one.
How's this? And students,
turn your books to chapter 24.
Oh,
no, sorry, 25. Turn it to 25. Just
right, right,
skip 24.
We're just going to skip this because we it's too uncomfortable to talk
no,
about.
No, that's going to be a mulligan right there, 25. Let's go to 25.
But, all right, so getting off of politics.
Okay.
So one of the things that we did last year, we also looked at entertainment.
Yes.
Yes. So this year we had Infinity War.
Infinity War, yeah.
We had Infinity War, and we've talked before about the superhero movie being our new morality tale.
Yeah.
And I kind of want to revisit that a little bit since we're on the subject.
Okay, of right? entertainment, yeah.
Of entertainment, and that's a big part of it. That's a huge part of it. And the idea of escalating it to a morality tale, right, is more and more interesting to me the more I think about it offline. Like, where is this, the superhero, is that the best medium to talk about our society? Now, we used to talk in morality tales way back in the day.
Something I said
about God. Right?
Something I said last week was that when a culture is, when a society reaches like a dark period in its growth,
okay,
it turns to fantasy in a way that it hasn't before.
Okay.
And I think as an American culture, one of the things that we've done is that we have engrossed ourselves in these fantasies. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
There are people in Hollywood that are like, oh my God, when the hell is the superhero thing going to come to an end so we can do other movies? Because those seem to be the only movies that are making money.
Well, I don't know about that.
Right, but that's the perception.
Okay.
And I point to that and say, you know, the reason that superheroes films and movies, and it permeates all the different forms of entertainment, from cartoons to comic books to
yep.
to TV shows to movies,
okay.
because we are in this kind of dark period as a nation, if you will.
So, are we looking for a new religion?
Maybe. I don't know.
You know, outside the norm. Like,
we're looking for something to give us like a clear cut
message
and
something universal too.
Right. And if you think about it, like with these superhero movies, you have a clear villain, you have a clear hero. There's no question.
Well, Black Panther, come on. Although I've been thinking about that too, and we talked about Black Panther.
Yeah, we had a whole episode about Black Panther.
Yeah, we did, and I've thought about it since then.
Yeah.
And I get where you're going with your part of the conversation here, but since Black Panther came out last year, yes?
It was February of this year, actually.
Yes, this, right, this year.
Black History Month.
Sorry, I'm already in 2019,
yeah.
apparently. So, you know, when we talked about it originally, we said, wow, the villain had a great point.
Uh-huh.
Right? The villain had a great point. And I've even heard it said, the villain wasn't wrong. Right?
Right.
He was maybe misguided, but he wasn't wrong.
No.
Right? Except that one thing we didn't bring up, and one thing I thought about later, is, wasn't he...
Killmonger?
Yeah.
From Black Panther?
Yeah. Like, he had an intellectual point, right? But if you look at it in an intellectual level, maybe he has a point. But at some point, we have to say if something is right or wrong, good or bad, right? So, honestly, and it's interesting saying this about a superhero movie, right?
Uh-huh.
But with him and with Thanos, right, where you're dealing with an absolute, can't you be correct in your thinking and still wrong in your morality?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
His solution was war. His solution was violence. His solution was if you extrapolate it out, extermination of people who thought differently.
And I think that's what makes
At least subjugation.
I think that's what makes it so relatable. Is that, I think that's one of the reasons that those two examples, it was easy for people to relate, because I think there's something about humanity that our immediate reaction to something is violence.
Yeah.
Whether
2001 taught us that.
Yeah. whether it's good or bad, you know, like, because violence can be, there are instances where violence can be a force of good. Right? When you're...
How?
That's a better question.
I'll take another lager. Yep. You know what? Yingling's fine. Either way.
Surprise him. Sorry about that, folks. Go ahead. Morality,
yeah.
Violence being a good thing.
Yeah. See, you can say that. You can say that violence can be a means to an end that is acceptable, but name an instance in which it is. Name an instance in which it was.
Where violence...
Well...
From history, name one. Where violence, and it was violence... So, like, okay, I'll concede, thank you so much, I'll concede that violence is in self-defense. Yes, you have a right to live. If someone attacks you, or Firefly, if someone tries to kill you, you try and kill them right back.
Well, that goes back to one of my heroes.
Okay.
Malcolm X. You know,
right.
If a man puts his hands on you, you make sure he can't put his hands on anyone else.
Okay. Great. I have no problem.
And I might be. I'm not sure if I'm quoting that 100% exactly.
Paraphrasing
but,
is fine.
Yeah.
We're drinking. It's fine. But my point is that I'm not talking about that, because that wasn't the violence that came out of nowhere that tried to solve an issue, right? World War II, World War I, right?
Yeah.
Any of that was a reaction to something that was so grand-scale violent that you had to respond with violence. What I'm talking about is somebody saw an issue and they decided to solve it with violence. Name me one instance where that has, one, worked, and two, been better.
Mandela.
Explain.
Mandela, and this is something that's been kind of lost in history.
Okay.
Mandela was part of what we would call now, and this is why, this is something that I wanted to bring up too in this year, is
okay.
The way we use language.
Oh,
if
okay.
If Nelson Mandela existed today, he would have been branded a terrorist.
He was.
Right. And
well, whatever that their equivalent was, but yeah.
Right. An insurgent, mm-hmm. Which is another way of, you know, what is the word? Like, when we look up the definition of the word insurgent, it means freedom fighter. It means rebel. You know,
somewhere
the
within.
Rebel alliance. You know, that idea.
It all comes back to Star Wars.
But there's this... So if you look at Mandela, you know... Now, granted, what did he get put in jail for? He was transporting weapons. Right?
Okay.
He gets put in jail.
Okay.
And during the time that he's in jail, the terrorist organization that he's a part of commits some of the most violent acts ever. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, it ends up being chalked up to the greater good. You know what I mean? Like, because they were fighting...
They won?
What's the old adage?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
History is written from the perspective of the winner.
Right, but did they start it?
That's a good question. No, they didn't.
They didn't.
They didn't.
Right, so...
So we see that as an acceptable form of violence. Because...
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Like, who started the violence? Right?
Yeah.
Who walked out of their house and started violence?
And that's... Okay, so talking about the movies, the two big movies of 2018.
Okay. Oh, that's
Black
right.
Black Panther.
That's how we got on that.
And Infinity War. If you look at it, you know, these two heroes, or excuse me, these two villains.
Yeah.
Because Killmonger was a villain.
Yes.
And
Thanos
was a villain as well.
Yeah.
People related with them.
Yeah.
People
oh, they did
really
a great
deeply
job
related.
With that.
Yeah, they really did a great job of like blurring that line of villain and hero or anti-hero.
Well,
and,
well okay, now Deadpool is an anti-hero.
Even okay, something like Deadpool, you know.
Right, but I wouldn't put the label of anti-hero on either Killmonger or Thanos at all.
Okay, fair enough.
Like, would you put anti-hero on Hitler?
No.
Right. And that's what they were essentially doing. One aspiring and the other doing. That is what, if you put anti-hero on them, you have to put it on.
And you know what someone pointed out to me later this year was the violence that Killmonger committed towards women in the movie is something that's kind of overshadowed. And you see that when he executes his girlfriend.
Yeah.
That, like, one moment he's, like, all lovey-dovey with.
Well,
you see that,
means to an end.
Yeah, you see that in the way he treats the elder when he picks her up and he holds her by the throat. You see that in his murder of one of the Dora Milaje. And just the, you know, like, throughout the film.
They made sure to do that. And I feel like that's a choice that the filmmakers made. Do you get the sense that that was his character or that was a tool?
Either way, it's kind of icky when you really sit down and think about it because
yeah.
He's so willing to commit violence towards women.
Right, but see,
does it?
Okay, I get what you're saying and I'm not defending him. I'm just saying if I was looking at Killmonger, who was talking about what he was doing, I think his dialogue was indiscriminate. I think who they paired him to face was the filmmaker putting an actress in front of him. Like, if he gripped up somebody by the throat in the throne room, there was a whole bunch of people. Whoever was closest.
Oh, right.
Was
yeah, no, that
up.
Clearly makes him a villain because, oh,
right.
My God.
It's a tool.
Yeah, yeah,
saying.
Yeah. No, I get what you're saying.
Not to defend him, but what I'm saying is that's a tool by the filmmakers. I think, quite frankly, just by his very nature, he would have been indiscriminate to whoever was in front of him, right? Like, he killed his girlfriend, quote-unquote. I'm air-quoting for everyone listening. He killed her because that's the quickest way to get to his enemy. You know what I mean?
Right.
He just happened to take her hostage. If he had shot her to get control of the plane for some reason I can't think of right now, and dude had taken the pilot hostage, you know what I mean? He'd have shot the pilot.
Right.
Is what I'm saying.
No, I get what you're saying.
So, anyway, I digress.
But those being two of the bigger movies this year,
yes.
That was interesting that was, and again, that ties in to the whole thing we were talking about with, like, fantasy and
yep.
Moral stories and so yeah.
So yeah, this year we were looking towards, and maybe this is just us, but we were looking towards morality tales, towards what is good, what is evil. We were asking these questions this year. Is that what defined the year?
I don't know, maybe.
Because literally, I can't think of anything else that defines this calendar year for me. Like, I was saying before we started recording, like, I thought about, like, years past. The world was always ending, wasn't it?
There
was,
yeah, there was
a
no,
Mayan calendar.
There was
or
no
there
major
was
apocalypse.
Y2K, or there was a meteor or something, right?
Well,
even
I mean,
if there was a meteor this year, I don't even remember it.
There were two or three instances where
near Earth objects.
Yeah. I think one of the So this year was definitely, in terms of like entertainment and just the world in general,
yep.
There was a bigger push than ever for political correctness. You saw people losing their jobs. You saw people falling, you know,
yep.
victim to their actions like never before.
Oh, sure.
You know, the Kevin Spaceys, the Harvey Weinsteins, the Roseanne Barrs.
Yep. Yep.
Just anybody who took a perceived act. And maybe I'm using the wrong terminology, but anybody who just kind of like. I feel like decisions this year were very precise and quick. There was no question about whether this was right or wrong. You know what I mean? Like
The court of public opinion.
Yeah, the court of public opinion. Yes, very.
Huh. Okay.
I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing or bad thing. I feel like in terms of, like, since we were talking about entertainment, you know, the strive to be more politically correct and more representative this year really came across with movies like Black Panther. With movies like, and I was telling you that I kind of got to personally experience it a little bit because I took my son to see, I got to see more movies this year.
Yep.
And the level of representation this year was better.
Good. Well, you know, you think a couple years ago when the Academy Awards got just blasted.
Yeah.
For not being inclusive in terms of their nomination. You know, not recognizing films where there was diversity. And it takes a couple years to correct that course because of production schedules and things
right.
like that. You know, you have to put up movies that they can consider and then they can consider them. But it's, you know, that's good. But it's reactionary as opposed to
yeah, and I don't know how much of it
else.
Was genuine
right.
versus
reactionary.
Pandering.
That's what I mean, yeah.
And I'm happy because, I took my son to see the Into the Spider-Verse, which, by the way,
yeah,
blew me away because I just wasn't expecting it to be as good as it was.
Really?
I don't know why. I don't know why.
I heard nothing but good things. I haven't seen
it's
it.
It's got 100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
The rare 100%.
Yeah, I know, right? But it was phenomenal for me, and I can't put into words because I was watching the movie with my son.
How many Spider-Mans were in that?
I think there was like five or six different. So it was Spider-Ham, Spider-Noir,
yep.
the Japanese Spider-Woman, Gwen, Spider-Gwen, and then there was two Peter Parkers, and then there was Miles Morales.
So
there was
seven
Spider-Men.
But seven Uncle Bens had to die to make that movie.
I'm not going to ruin the movie for people because it was phenomenal. But there was... I was sitting there watching it with my son, and the way his eyes lit up when Miles Morales' mom started yelling at him in Spanish, and he was like...
And he started having flashbacks?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's like, oh, wait.
And he was like, we have to go. I have to clean my room.
Right, but there was so it was phenomenal to see that my son connected with this character that I connected with when I was a kid, but it was I don't want to say deeper connection, but it was a more personal connection for him because
it was a visceral connection.
It was a reflection of himself.
Yeah, he could see it.
Yeah,
it wasn't his imagination. He could see it, even though it's on the screen and it's imagination, but it's still different when you see something versus reading it.
Yeah. But also see something that was reflective of him and his experience.
Mm-hmm.
Because his mom yells at him in Spanish and English. But, you know,
I've heard it.
And shit, even me, like, this as a kid, I was like, oh my God, his mom is yelling at him in Spanish.
Yeah.
So,
and you had to go clean your room.
So if you listen to one of our earlier episodes where I kind of played down how important inclusion was.
You played it down.
Now that I'm hearing that episode now,
yeah.
I think I I played it down a little bit.
Okay.
But now getting to see it, and then, you know, Aquaman
seeing
came up.
Seeing someone experience it.
Yeah. And actually, like, so, yeah, like, I got to talk to more people who had that kind of reaction to the movie.
Yep.
Like, I was listening to somebody, and they were talking about how they're, or maybe this was something I read online. I can't remember.
The lines are blurred.
Yeah, the lines blur after a while. But they were talking about how they went to see, this clearly didn't come out this year, but they went to see Rogue One with their grandfather.
Okay.
And Diego Luna plays one of the characters, and he's speaking with a full Spanish accent.
Yeah.
He doesn't bother to cover it up.
Sorry, sí.
Sí. And their grandfather was kind of like, so people are cool with the fact that he didn't, you know what I mean?
Like, he had them check.
Yeah, he was like, but it was like this moment where...
Yeah, of realization.
Because growing up Hispanic, you know, it was like, and I've said this, I actively have gone out of my way to cover up my own accent. So the fact that that's not something that's necessary. Now, one of the things, how much of it was pandering and how much of it was genuine is a different question.
Well, and that was something we touched on when we were talking about inclusion just in general. Like, are you, you know, pandering might be a byproduct of it, but it's because enough people wanted to see it that are being taken seriously, that it was there.
Yeah.
You know, it's there to be pandered to.
But also, too, I think, is now that it's here, can we fucking support it so that it continues to be here? You know, I've had many a conversation, like Randy, the Super Tribble.
Yeah.
I've had conversations with him back in before where it's like, all right, folks, we finally got this comic book. Who the fuck is out buying it?
Yeah.
So if you're not out actively supporting...
Yeah, it's not enough to know it's there. You have to support it.
You have to support it, right, exactly.
Yep. By the way, every time you say Super Tribble, I go like Kamehameha with him in my brain. Like if he was throwing one, and it's amazing. If you could just see what was going on in my brain right now. But
that was another thing that I thought was like, the language that we used to, like, we're, it wasn't just consequences, it wasn't just, you know, like, people said things that were wrong, and they got fucking clear consequences. Roseanne Barr comes to mind.
Okay.
But, like, I feel like, now, the question being, how much of it was genuine and how much of it was forced?
What?
Just the... I feel like this is a year where we actively went out of our way to be conscious about what it was that we were communicating with one another. And I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the first couple of years of this whole, like, especially, like, gender identification, like, in terms of beyond the traditional, and that coming to the forefront, and movements like that, where people were being more and more conscious of what they have to say. The first couple of years, obviously, growing pains. We all kind of have to figure out where we are and what we're doing with that. But... yeah, this could be, I mean, the first year where we're getting good at it, and then as we move forward, we'll say the next year, we're better at it today than we were yesterday. So that continues to progress. I don't think we're there yet where we've got it nailed.
No, not by
any means. But yeah, no, definitely a step in the right direction. But that goes back to my point. Like, what defined this year? What defined it?
I don't know.
I think it was one of those years, for me personally. No one has to agree with this. You don't have to agree with this. For me personally, I don't know that this year was ever defined, was ever... It's like a mulligan.
Yeah, there was nothing...
It's a, you know what? This year happened, and we're going to keep moving. And that's it. That's all I got for 2018. It was kind of just the year for me. I don't know. How did you feel about the year?
So for me,
like
for,
if you were gonna sum it up, how would you sum up this?
This
year?
Was this was a really trying year, personally for me.
Fair.
It was a year of change.
Yes.
It was. Yeah, I guess that's how I would sum it up. It was a trying year. I felt. And personally and as a society, like, we were faced with, all right, so this is what it is. You can either change with it or it changes you. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, it makes sense.
But beyond that, I don't know that there was anything that, like you said, clearly defined.
We have to change. Okay. I'll concede that is probably the clearest message that came out of this year. We have to change. To what is completely undefined.
Yeah.
And whether it's personal, whether it's societal, whether it's world, like, we have to change to fill in the blank. There's no clear-cut direction on that in any way, shape, or form. And that's more of a problem than anything, but it's a step. Now 2019, we have to define it.
Yeah,
and
I think,
are we gonna in 2019? What do you think? We'll start our bold predictions.
Bold predictions? Are we at that point now?
Why not?
It
seems like a natural flow of the conversation to me.
Yeah. I hope so. Because
that's a beautiful sentiment, but I hope so is where we get into that problem. Like, we need to change.
See, here's the thing.
Yeah, I hope we do.
And I've said this before. I don't believe in New Year's resolutions.
Because
I think they're bullshit.
Yes.
Because if you actively, now I don't know what it is about us as human beings. We seem to need to have like a beginning point and end point.
Yeah. Well, we've been conditioned to that. We talked about that in the episode where we were talking about like
conditioning
and also needing to have something in the calendar. Like,
right.
Because we talk about things like the solstice and when to plant and when to harvest. Right, we need to know when that is, and we need to do it habitually. So when we turn the calendar, we think about these things, and we don't have to think about these things any other time of the year because that's not the time to think about it. So we should, but we don't.
Well, I know for Ramon, I can only speak for Ramon.
Okay.
Third
person perspective coming now.
I'm hoping that 2019 is my year, in that this is the year that I'm going to live for me, and I'm going to try to be the best that I can be.
Ooh. Year of your best self.
And that's not a resolution, by the way. That's just
a feeling?
No,
a gut feeling?
No. That's me actively. Like, no. I'm actively,
no, you've decided.
No. I've put things, and we talked about this before, off mic, where, you know, I'm taking active steps to better myself.
Yep.
This year.
Good.
In ways that I have ignored or not paid attention to. Embrace, whatever. Right. So, good.
Good. Now, I have a couple of things that I want to do this year as well. I'm in a different place. I don't necessarily see it as, like, I think it was 2014, 2015, where I literally went into the year like you're going in and saying, you know what? Best year ever.
No. That's bullshit.
That was my sort of mythos. Best year ever. I'm going into it. Best year ever. And I went after things, and I did things, and I tried things, and, you know, and it was a very good year. It was a very good year. Best year ever, debatable. But that was sort of the intention I had going into it. And maybe it was the fact that I had intention going into it. This year, I'm going into saying there are things I'm going to do. But quite frankly,
I'm not at a place where I can have my best year ever. So to go from 0 to 60, you know, in one day, essentially a calendar flip, you know, and just hit the ground running is not what I'm looking for. So maybe I'm gearing up for 2020, but I'm looking at it as a year of progress, but not something where I'm really going to knock it out of the park.
Right.
I'm hedging my bet. That's going to be my 2020.
No, I'm not going to say it's going to be my best year ever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm living for me this year.
Good.
Good. That's me.
Good. Live your best year, man.
You're an asshole.
I'm bit wet. I'm encouraging you.
You're encouraging me. Okay, sure. All right, so do you want to do the in memoriam?
Yes, please.
All right, so...
Yes, we would be remiss if we did not discuss all the people that have shuffled off the mortal coil this year.
Yeah, and... Oh, God, this is a little depressing when I was putting this list together.
Yeah, I imagine.
Please forgive me if I mispronounce any of it. So this year we lost Isio Takada, famous animator from Japan, who definitively left a mark on anime. One of the last movies that I think he directed was The Red Turtle. And without him, you would not have had movies like Ponya or Princess Mononoke or any of the really
good
anime.
The real high fantasy stuff.
Right. Harry Anderson, comedian.
Yeah, he was young.
Yeah, he was young.
He was young.
Well, youngish. From Night Court. Fame.
He was 54?
No, I don't even... I can't tell you.
He was like late 50s, maybe.
Yeah. Director Penny Marshall, or Laverne from Laverne and Shirley was
like... She got into directing after that and has directed some amazing films.
Mm-hmm.
It's
A League of Their Own.
Yep.
Just
a great mind for it, but she... you ever see an interview with her? It's just her.
Yeah, see, yeah.
It's just her talking about film in a way that is just like so analytic. My analytic brain goes off.
Yeah.
And she's so analytical about it, and she's just chain smoking cigarettes the whole time.
Steven Hillenburg,
okay.
Who's the creator of SpongeBob.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he passed away this year. There was a big petition online to get a particular song played. At the Super Bowl in honor of him.
Wow,
yeah.
Really? What's the petition website? I can't think of it.
Not GoFundMe.
No. I'll think of
petition.com,
it.
Petition.com, I don't
know. I'll look at it. I'll look it up while you keep going.
Scott Wilson, who is the actor who played Herschel on The Walking Dead, passed away this year.
And recently he was playing?
Yeah, yeah. Herschel.
Oh, wow. See, I don't watch the series.
Oh, you don't? Oh, God. Okay. I don't know what else to...
I know Reedus, and that's it.
Burt Reynolds
passed
away this year.
Yes.
And apparently he was a lot poorer than people thought.
Well, yeah.
Essentially, he was staying at the mansion that he was in. There was a real estate mogul who was basically letting him stay there for free.
Yeah, until he could take it over, yeah.
I didn't know this, but did you know that he almost played Han Solo?
Yeah, no, I did know that.
And I'm the big Star Wars.
Yeah, he almost played it, and the fact that he backed out of it was why Harrison Ford got his
thing. Yeah.
Because he was the carpenter on set, and he backed out, and they went, and they scrambled, and they pulled him in.
John McCain passed away this year.
Yes.
And
yeah, that was an amazing last few months or several months
of his life. Yeah.
He knew he wasn't coming out of that.
What I thought was really
poignant, that it was an outside chance, but he kept coming to work.
Yeah, he kept coming to work.
He kept voting.
Yes. and was critical of shutting down one of Trump's movements to undercut Obamacare. And one of the things I thought was really poignant was that he asked Obama to speak at his funeral.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, so this was a big one. Aretha Franklin passed away this year. Did you know that she had performed at over 3 inaugurations of presidents?
Yes.
And was still performing.
Yeah, she was.
Still performing. And
just amazing. She'd done something in Philly.
No, I think you're thinking of Patti LaBelle.
And I might be.
Yeah. but Aretha Franklin, just you want to talk about a voice of a generation.
Yep.
Oh, wow. Okay, so this was one that Joe Jackson, Michael Jackson's dad, passed away this year.
Yep.
And say what you want to say about that man, but he beat those kids into fucking success. I'm not going to sugarcoat what he did. But, and it was I think it was D.L. Hughley who
Wait.
Look, say what you want to say about him, but of his, you know, his kids were successful, right?
Two of them.
Come on, man. The Jackson 5.
Okay, all right.
You know, even LaToya broke down and spoke at his funeral. From the world of science, Alan Bean, astronaut.
Fourth man.
Fourth man to walk on the moon. Was the commander of the Apollo 12 mission.
Mm-hmm.
Passed away this year. His big claim to fame was that he saw himself as the first artist on the moon. And you can go to his website
and see all the graffiti he did.
And see, no.
Oh God, was he Banksy? Did we lose Banksy?
Margaret Kidder.
Don't know that one. Sorry.
Lois Lane, from the original Christopher Reeve movie.
Yep.
She passed away this year. Tragically, suicide. She was
really.
Yeah, long time mental health issues, bipolar disorder.
Bring us down.
I'm sorry, man. Memorandum. Barbara and George Bush this year.
Yeah, and
Barbara
died,
I think it was in March, and then Bush Senior
just recently, November.
November.
You know what struck me about that?
What?
You ever read Kurt Vonnegut book.
You mentioned Kurt Vonnegut last week.
Maybe. Einstein. Darn it, I'm not going to remember the name of the book, but the one with Ice Nine in it, where he had a line about couples that die close to each other.
Yes, yes.
And it was, and that is exactly what I thought about.
I know what you're talking about. That the
we're
the
not
time in between.
It.
No. Yeah. Because we talked about this in our previous episode.
Right. The time between a partner's death and the other partner's death is directly proportional to how close they were.
Yeah.
And, you know, the characters in that book died within the same minute.
Of each other, yeah.
Of each other. And, you know, Bush wasn't in great health, you know, but when she was gone, he was just brokenhearted.
Yeah, I had mixed feelings on that because of the whole, you know, Barbara Bush, her big claim to fame as the first lady was her push for literacy, but it was also the war on drugs.
I think you're thinking of the other one.
No, that's Barbara Bush.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
I did my homework on this one.
All right.
One of the ones that personally affected me.
I think you're thinking of Reagan's wife, but...
Well, her too, but...
She carried it on? She picked up the torch?
She picked up the porch, yeah.
Okay.
The torch.
All right.
I don't know why I said porch. Anyway,
doesn't matter.
one of the ones. This one kind of bummed me out for. I'll admit, Stephen Hawking passed away this year.
Yeah.
Which. The man lived such an amazing life.
He did.
I got to see his movie. So when he was like 19 years old, he was diagnosed with ALS, and they gave him 2 years, and he lived beyond that.
Yep.
And you want to talk about, forget the scientist aspect, but the educator, you know, like Stephen Hawking as an educator, as a communicator of science and just education. Just phenomenal mind, you know, in his way of perceiving the world. And to think about the fact that the man was basically, you know, during the last 30 or 40 years of his life, he was communicating via a device that was reading his facial twitches, you know?
Yep.
And still, you know, British man with an American robotic voice. Dolores, and you're going to have to forgive me for the pronunciation, Dolores Oridian from the Cranberries.
Yes, yeah. She,
again, another one that came to, I don't think it was ruled a suicide. It was an accidental death. She died of drowning.
Yeah.
And they discovered that she had, like, 2 times the legal limit of narcotics in her system.
Yeah.
At the time. But you
yeah,
were talking about...
That wasn't her intent, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she was on an uptick because she just... She just released a new album with the Cranberries.
Yep. She was finding her voice again. She'd been out of the scene for a long time, so...
Yeah.
Unfortunate.
Anthony Bourdain. Again, another suicide.
Yeah.
He was young. I mean, for today, you know, he was 54? 54?
Yeah, 54
years old. But apparently he had a really dark relationship with his girlfriend, wife, I'm not sure.
Yeah, he was... He was the tortured artist of the
food world,
multi-million-dollar food world.
And I gotta give it to him because I did see a couple of his shows.
Yeah.
He kind of convinced me on the idea that food can be art. You know, like just watching the way that he would prepare.
I didn't know a lot about him. I watched his show a couple of times, but he struck me as somebody that was pretentious for the sake of being famous, but at the same time was able to communicate a message that I also think he believed. So he was both sides of the spectrum for me,
yeah.
And it was more that food is the universal translator.
Ah, okay.
You know what I mean? And that was a common theme that he always came back to. That was his touchstone. Even when he was being an asshole. And he was perfect in Archer. You remember the Archer episode where he was a bastard chef? He was perfect for that. Because that's his delivery and his entire demeanor. But if you peel that onion, you get to... He truly understood food being the thing that can bring us together.
Yeah.
You want to understand a culture, you eat their food. And if they had boiled his show down to just that beautiful message, nobody would have watched it. So he did what he had to do. But, yeah, so I got mixed feelings on the man, but he gave us at least that message. So there you go.
And the last one that I'm going to... And this is the one that, like...
Yeah, I know. I know where you're going.
Stan Lee.
Yep. Yeah.
I didn't get a chance to say this when we were doing the top five nice, naughty people.
Yes.
I have to... Okay, so Stan Lee was a big one for me. And I knew it was coming because, again...
Well, he's 95.
He was 95 years old, and his wife passed away last year. And it was, you know, like the Kurt Vonnegut thing.
Yeah.
The... And he's married to his wife for 75 years. So it was like, you knew.
One more, thank
and,
you so much.
And the messed up part was that, like, me and my friends, we, you know, like, when his wife passed away, it was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. They've been married 75 years. It is just a matter of time now.
Yep.
Like, we all accepted that. And I had a friend who put it way better than I could ever put it. He said, if nothing else, the one thing I have to be grateful to Stan Lee for is the family that I have now. Because of his work, I got to bond with all these people that I never would have bonded with.
Yep.
Over his work. Yep. You know, like,
yeah.
Say what you want to say about, you know, like, we talked about comic books being the morality tales of the modern age and whatnot. But more than anything, I got to bond with these, and still do. I meet perfect strangers, yep, who will notice the T-shirt that I'm wearing, who will notice the ring or notice something, yep, you know, of his, and they'll be like, ah, and I get to have, you know, we were at the bar for like 30 minutes, yep, and had like this little conversation with the person next to us,
yep,
because of the fact that we were talking about comic books, yep, and we were talking about it. So,
or one of my favorite moments, when the first time I met Randy.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I met him, and he was working at Amalgam, and he still does, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, he's working there, and I said, and we watched Black Panther, and I said, the way the guys from the mountains dealt with people is how you should deal with people that are, you know, complaining about their coffee or whatever. And I just said, I just went into a bit. And he completely was on the same page. And you were as well, where I was like, yeah, I'm sorry, my coffee's a little bit cold.
Yeah.
I was like, that's how you get rid of annoying customers. And we bonded. We bonded. I love Randy.
Yeah, yeah. But the fact that so many people, I can't begin to tell you how many times I've been somewhere or whatever, at a party or something, mm-hmm, and I'm feeling like the fucking wallflower, and I got to, you know, somebody will walk by and be like, oh my God, is that a Iron Man t-shirt, or is that a...
And it'll go both ways, right? Like, you'll see somebody with something that you recognize, yeah, and walk up and be like, yo.
Because nerds, one thing about nerds is that we brand ourselves,
yeah,
in our tribalism. You know, this being, you know, nerdom being our tribe.
Mm-hmm.
And when you come across comic book nerds or nerds of whatever, they usually have something, whether it's the Star Trek The Next Generation thing on my watch, or the, you know, Black Panther ring that I'm wearing,
yeah,
or the X-Men tattoo, whatever.
Or the Rebel Alliance tattoo, which is my personal favorite.
Right.
When I look at your artwork.
Right. So you there's this thing to be like, oh, you're one of us.
Yes.
We, you know, and
you send
and
up a flag and you get a response.
And the hours upon hours upon hours of time that I've spent discussing that man's work, and really, like, you know, I have friends that are friends because of that, and yeah, nothing else. Because, yeah, there's a whole group of people.
Because otherwise they're jerks.
Well, no. But, like, I have a group of friends that I'm friends with because of Marvel, because, yeah, of DC, because of, you know, and I don't know if I would be friends, you know, like, we met in high school.
Right. But you might
and
not
the
have
thing
bonded.
That bonded us, yeah, because there was nothing, you know, like, one was a sports guy, the other one, you know, mm-hmm, two of them were sports guy, the other ones were like comic book, you know. But the thing that we had to bond over was our love of comics.
Which
and
is a beautiful thing.
It is. But I don't know if that would be possible without
his work.
Yeah. And that's what I mean. Fair. Not saying that he was the end all be all, but, you know.
But you gravitated towards
and
him.
And I went
and
to,
other
when I saw the.
Well.
Spoiler alert, there's a
oh.
There's a cameo in Into the Spider-Verse. And I'm really looking
really?
Forward to, yeah, yeah, yeah. Stan Lee pops up for a second. It's like, oh my God, I almost started bawling my eyes out.
Oh.
And I'm looking forward to his last cameo, which is going to be in
Avengers Endgame.
They already filmed it?
Yeah, for, according to what I read, yeah.
Nice.
So his last cameo.
Oh, that's great.
That's going to be.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I'm glad to hear that. They got that in the can first. Good for him.
Yeah. So, this was our.
So that was a cheery way to end.
Ah. 2018.
What are you looking forward to? 2019.
Lord. I'm looking forward to some of the tech coming out next year.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Like what?
Updated, you know, computer and cell phone stuff. There's going to be, I'm looking forward to, you know, obviously movies.
Okay.
We just talked about Avengers Endgame and the new Star Wars movie comes out next, should be coming out next year.
Okay.
Captain Marvel. What else? What else is jumping out at me? I'm looking forward to just taking advantage of this year, you know? I want to, if nothing else this year, I want to hit the ground running.
Nice.
Not, you know, take it for granted.
Okay. Quick thing for me before I say mine.
Okay.
Change.org was the one I was trying
to
think
about. Yeah. You were trying to think about that earlier.
Earlier. You know, I'm always looking forward to tech advances. I'm always looking forward to entertainment advances. But those are entertainment at the end of the day.
Right.
I'm really looking forward to this Powerball drawing tonight. It's $415 million. I'm going to do a lot of good with that. And that's really what I'm focused on this year.
Okay. crap. Any predictions you want to make for the year? Or?
Flying car for everyone in their driveway.
Did I ever... okay. Did I ever tell you why that's a horrible fucking idea?
This is... Yes. No, we got to get the self-driving cars first, and then the flying cars will be fine. They'll be safe. We've talked about this.
Yeah.
But, no. 2018 for me was such a mulligan year that I'm really looking forward to trying to better myself this year. I literally took a year off. This year was important.
Yeah.
It was gone. It was gone before I even knew it.
You know what?
I not shame myself, but I'm disappointed in myself that this year, I mean, we had this podcast, and this is the thing that I put the most focus into. And you can't tell by listening to it, but but this is the thing I put the most focus into this year. And I've been able to multitask before, you know what I mean? And I need to get back to that. So it's a year that 2019 has a year of promise for me. And what I hope to do with that is to benefit others by it. And I took a bit of a selfish year this year, so I need to get back to that.
Well,
so that's about all my prediction for this
One thing I am really grateful for this year is that I feel like we got super focused with the podcast.
Yes.
And I'm really grateful for that. And I think, you know, like if there's a... This was the one thing that was a focus for me. And, like... And... I was telling somebody else, like, I one of the things I love about this is this podcast for me personally is therapeutic, in that I don't care if no one's listening, please listen, but that it's therapeutic for me in the sense that, like, it allows me to kind of put my thoughts down, if you will. I know it's not on paper.
Yeah, no.
But
it's for posterity, so it's the same.
Yeah, and you know what? If we have listeners now, and we have people that have been, like, giving us feedback, and I am wholeheartedly listening to all of the feedback that we get, good or bad, and I really want to continue that this year. I want this to be, you know, that is my goal for this year, is that we continue this and we push it in new directions and do new things with it, and that we explore whatever this is becoming. Because I love this, and this is more than a passion project for me at this point. It's something that I'm wholeheartedly...
Well, let me propose a toast. Here's to being able to quit our jobs and do this full time.
Oh my God, that would be a dream come true. Salud.
Salud.
All right, folks. That's 2018
year in review.
Year in review.
And get ready.
And I'm sure that there's stuff that we missed, so reach out to us and let us know.
Yeah,
and,
what did we miss? Yeah, tell us. And we'll do a year in review part two to cover all the stuff we missed. And then we'll lead right into new 50s. Oh, should I not?
Oh, no.
Teaser. See what I did there?
Yeah.
I created interest.
Ooh.
Yeah, for all the people that stayed till the end of this.
Right, folks. All right. GarblePodcast@gmail.com. GarblePodcast.com. Garble Podcast on Twitter and Garbled Pod on Instagram. And, yeah.
Google, find us.
Yeah, you can Google us now, folks. Oh, my God, we're Googleable. Is that a word? Googleable?
All
right, and on that note, good night.
Later.
Thank you for listening to the Garbled Podcast. Please like and share on social media and check out garbledpodcast.com for future episodes, updates, and conversation.